Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guests this week, Cynthia Race and Lauren Race Grange. So, Cynthia, over 20 years later, you decided to publish Myrtle. What prompted you to pull the story out of the drawer and do all the work necessary to send it out in the world?
Well, first I have to tell you that, so I wrote the story for Lauren, and she loved it, and would ask for it almost every night, to the point where she knew it by heart. And if I missed a page, she would say, "You missed that part," as all kids do and all parents know. Anyway, that Christmas, when Lauren, we asked our children to make up their Christmas list, what Lauren wanted was a black doll. She wanted a PJ Sparkles doll, and it had to be a black doll. And we couldn't find any in Toronto. So I did a story in the Toronto Star later on about this extensive search, trying to find a black doll in the city of Toronto for my daughter, who now wanted a black doll after going through all this. And so that story was published. Fast forward now to last November, and Joe Hall from the Toronto Star calls and calls us both, Lauren and myself, for an interview. He says, "We're doing an update on the story from 20-odd years ago."
How lovely.
Yes. After that interview was over and the story ran, both Lauren and Hammond, my husband, kept saying, "You really ought to publish that story." So I, through a very circuitous way, I ended up finding an illustrator and publishing the story.
The illustrations for the book are very beautiful ones and engaging. So how did you find your illustrator and work with her, as I know she lives on the other side of the world from us?
Yes. Joe Robinson lives in South Africa. And I'd known of her as a very respected blogger and author and editor, but never really had anything to do with Joe. In early January of this year, I said to Hamlin, I'm just going to send this story to Chris Graham, who has a very popular book blog and based in London, England. And he said, "You really shouldn't do that. You should get it illustrated." And I was so tired, and I just said, "You know what? No, I'm just going to send it to Chris." So I sent it to Chris, and I said, "Chris, Hamlin says I should really get an illustrator, but just publish it on your blog, just so it gets out into the world, and I don't care." Chris immediately writes back and says, "No, Hamlin is right. You need an illustrator." And he recommended Joe Robinson. So I contacted Joe, and she replied within minutes, and she said, "I love this story. I would love to do the illustrations if you will allow me."
Wonderful.
And so that's how we started working together. She started drawing the pictures in mid-January and put a lot of work into them since then.
Okay, so now Myrtle's on her way to becoming an Amazon bestseller. So what strategies did you advise your mother to follow, Lauren? Tell us about the crucial steps a writer must take to run a successful marketing campaign.
I'd say be realistic. You can't spread yourself too thin. If you're choosing to go the social media route, which I think for most authors, especially authors that are self-publishing, that social media is the less expensive option to go. But don't spread yourself too thin. Determine what social media platforms are going to get you the most bang for your buck. So number one, determine who is your target audience. With my mom's book, it is a children's book, but we had to think of who's actually going to be purchasing the book. It's going to be parents, or it's going to be adults who have children in their lives. And then we thought, how can we most effectively reach them? So we've leveraged social media. We've leveraged Facebook. Luckily, my mom has developed quite a following through her other two books and with her blog. And from there, her social media accounts have really been about just giving her followers a glimpse of the work that she's doing, but also giving them a little preview as to stories that could be featured in her upcoming books.
So choosing your platform's the first thing.
Yeah.
And you're identifying your audience.
Exactly.
What's next?
From there, it's coming up with an editorial calendar. So determining what content or, you know, what messages you're going to share on a particular day. Being organized, I would say, is incredibly important. And knowing, you know, what is the goal of every message that you're going to be sending out there. keeping those messages short and ensuring that you always have a lot of imagery, especially with a book like Myrtle, where there's so many, it's just beautiful illustrations. It was important that we showcase that on social media. We've really focused on the messages of around self-acceptance, self-love, friendship, and we've developed content that really supports that. We've used Facebook, we've used Goodreads, we've used Twitter as well. And of course, we've also used my mom's blog to give her followers a chance to get a peek at, you know, what Myrtle, who Myrtle is, and asking them to really spread the word if the story resonates with them. And lucky for us, the story has been resonating with a lot of folks. We've also been asking for reviews, so from kids, asking their parents, if the kids love the book, can you take a photo and maybe just to get a quick testimonial from them? And we've then turned those testimonials into images that we share on social media. Mm-hmm. It might seem very overwhelming at first when you think of how am I going to market a book, but it's really use the content, use the story of the book to share that with the world. And make sure that you also underestimate the power of word of mouth, whether it's reaching out to your own contacts and asking them, you know, can you take a look at this book and give it a read? And if it resonates with you, can you just do a simple review, even on your own personal Facebook page with your own friends? It's really helped with getting the word out for Myrtle. And I highly suggest other authors, especially if they're self-publishing, to go that route too.
Good. I hope people are taking note of all this.
I think we should also say that bloggers, Lauren reminded me that among my followers are many, many bloggers. Mm-hmm. And so she would say, you know, reach out to your blogger friends and get them involved. And even a couple of blogger friends that I did not reach out to have been doing great reviews of Myrtle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, I've seen some of those.
Yeah,
yes.
And it was Lauren that kept saying, you know, have you written to your blogger friends today?
So I think Myrtle the Purple Turtle is going to have a very positive effect on children, parents and teachers who read it. How can we help all children to feel their own backgrounds and personalities have value and thus increase inclusion and appreciation of difference?
Well, I think you have to... And I think most parents do this, is to pay attention to your children and listen to them, because Lauren didn't come home and complain about what happened to her at school that day. We just noticed over a period of a couple of days that she had stopped playing with Quentin, stopped bringing him to school, and was edgy, you know, when we asked, why aren't you bringing Quentin to school today? So I think you have to listen to your kids and watch them, because when they're young, they don't always have a chance to tell you when they're feeling rejected or feeling, you know, bullied. I had the skills to write a story because I was working in children's television. I was doing a lot of that back then. But I think between the three of us, her older sister, Nikisha, her dad, Hamlin, and myself, once we became aware that was an issue, and that, you know, she was probably wondering, well, you know, why is her dad dark-skinned and, you know, is his skin dirty too or what? You know, why is her grandfather, you know? And so once we became aware of that, it was just trying to find ways to reassure her that, and also to make sure that our children are accepting of other children, that they don't, you know, bully kids who are different. I mean, Lauren, you had kids at school, and one boy in particular, who had a facial deformity.
Right.
And I mean, I'd like to think it's because of the way that we raised you, that you were one of the people that he felt most comfortable with. You accepted him right from the get-go, and he became your friend. And the story is a story of inclusion, not just about color, but about all the different ways in which human beings are different, that they might find themselves mocked or jeered or just ostracized because of.
Yes, well, it's got a very important message for a classroom, for instance. So I hope it's used a great deal in the classroom.
Me too. Me too.
Okay, let's hear some more about Myrtle.
Okay, so this part is she goes home very upset because of what the other turtle said. And her mother, the moment her mother saw Myrtle, she knew something was wrong. So she swam out of the water to meet Myrtle. "Myrtle, my little turtle," said Myrtle's mother, "why are you so sad?" She gave Myrtle a playful little nudge with her nose. "Mommy," said Myrtle, "why are we purple?" "That's just the color we are," said Myrtle's mother. "But why aren't we like the other turtles?" asked Myrtle. "Some turtles are green, and some are purple," said Myrtle's mother. "Purple is a very nice color. It's made up of other colors. You should feel very special to be purple, Myrtle." But Myrtle did not feel special. She just felt very purple and very sad. Myrtle looked at the other girl and boy turtles playing at the edge of the pond. They were not purple. Myrtle wanted to look like them. She did not want to be different. She thought and thought and thought until she got an idea. "Grass is green," she thought. "Maybe if I rub grass all over myself, my skin and shell will turn green like the other turtles." "Have you ever seen a turtle's fingers?" "No." "Well, that's because they don't really have hands or fingers. They have 4 feet, 2 at the front and 2 at the back, and they are short and fat and not good for cutting grass or rubbing it on yourself." So Myrtle used her mouth to cut some blades of grass, but she couldn't rub it on her shell and body. She rubbed her face in the grass. She rubbed the bottom of her shell and her 4 feet in the grass. She thought she looked a little bit more green and a little less purple. But her neck and tail were all still completely purple. Then another idea popped into Myrtle's head. "If I want my shell to be green, I have to turn over on my back and rub my shell on the grass," she thought. It wasn't easy. Myrtle finally rolled over onto her back. She rubbed her shell into the grass. She rubbed and rubbed and rubbed, until finally she decided, "I must be all green now." But Myrtle had a problem, a big problem. She was stuck. She could not turn back over. She couldn't roll over to stand on her feet. She tried and tried and tried. She got so tired from trying that she fell asleep. Now, while Myrtle was off trying to make herself look green, her friends noticed that she was missing from the side of the pond. They wanted her to join in a game they were playing. "She probably went for a walk," said Gertie Turtle. "She loves walks." "But this is her favorite game," said Snapper Turtle, "and we need one more turtle to play it." They quickly decided to go and find Myrtle. They finally found her. She was asleep, on her back. "Myrtle!" Gertie shouted. "Wake up!" Myrtle woke up and smiled at her friends. Gertie said, "Myrtle, what were you doing? I have never seen a turtle asleep on her back before." "Me neither," said Myrtle, yawning. "Can you please help me to turn over?" Myrtle's friends got together and stood on one side of Myrtle. 1, 2, 3, said Hurtle Turtle as they carefully turned her over. That did it. Myrtle was on her feet again. She was very happy to see her friends. But her friends were surprised when they had a good look at her. "Myrtle," said Snapper Turtle, you look different." Now it was Myrtle who was surprised. She didn't want to look different. She wanted to look not purple. And she thought her friends would like her better now that she was green. Gertie came very close to Myrtle and in a very friendly voice asked, "What happened to your pretty purple skin and shiny purple shell?" "I don't want to be purple anymore," said Myrtle. "I want to be like everyone else." "But we're not all the same," said Snapper. "I have a long neck and a small shell." "And I have brown spots on my shell," said Gertie. "See?" "And I'm more brown than green," said Hurtle. Myrtle had never thought about it like that. She looked at her three friends and back at herself. We're all different from each other, she laughed happily. And we're best friends, said Gertie, also laughing. Myrtle took a look at her purple-green feet. She couldn't see her face and shell, but she imagined that she must look kind of funny. She felt a little bit silly, but she also felt happy again. Myrtle, Gertie, Hurtle, and Snapper all went back to the big pond. They were going to play Myrtle's favorite game, but first, they had one thing to do. They had to help Myrtle to wash off all that green. The end.
That is lovely. So many, many thanks for coming in, Cynthia and Lauren. Where can listeners buy your book, Cynthia?
So it's available right now on Amazon everywhere, all the Amazons.
It's also available on Kindle for download as well.
That's good. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning in to the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.